White specks swirl into a blue blur, forming the words Momentum Pictures. A cityscape looms out of a cloudy sky. A figure climbs an unattached ladder and tugs on a light pole. The screen fills with light. In white letters, GK Films. With stars crossing the heavens, the picture fades to black.
Guard! Royal salute! Present! Arms!
GK Films presents. Royal guardsmen in bearskins stand to attention. 1819. A child is born in a London palace. Caught between two royal uncles, the King of England and the King of the Belgians, she is destined to be a queen and to rule a great empire. Unless she is forced to relinquish her powers and sign a regency order. A regent is appointed to govern in place of a monarch who is absent, disabled, or too young. A peephole view into a sumptuous room where a lady-in-waiting is laying out an ermine-lined cloak on a seat. A spaniel sitting on the hem of the cloak hops up onto the seat.
Some people are born more fortunate than others. Such was the case with me. But as a child, I was convinced of quite the opposite.
A young girl plays hopscotch.
What little girl does not dream of growing up as a princess?
Spied on through an upstairs banister.
But some palaces are not at all what you'd think. Even a palace can be a prison.
The young teenaged girl trails a stick along some railings as she wanders through the palace grounds.
Mama never explained why she would have someone taste my food, why I couldn't attend school with other children or read popular books.
Alone in a study, she knocks over a doll with her finger. A book on a shelf catches her eye and she lifts it down to look at it.
When my father died, Mama and her advisor, Sir John Conroy, created rules. He said they were for my protection, and he called it the Kensington system. I could not sleep in a room without Mama, or even walk downstairs without holding the hand of an adult.
She opens a huge tome, tracing the lineage of the House of Hanover.
I learned the reason for all this when I was 11. My Uncle William was the King of England, yet he and his three brothers could boast only one living child. And that was me. Sir John's dream was that the king would die and there would be a regency where my mother would rule England and he would rule my mother. So I began to dream of the day when my life would change and I might be free. And I prayed for the strength to meet my destiny.
I will be good.
28th of June, 1838 at Westminster Abbey. Victoria's coronation. The Archbishop anoints her, and the imperial crown of state is lowered onto her head. Her feet not quite long enough to rest on the royal footstool. Peers and peeresses don their coronets. Dark-haired young Victoria, wearing the imperial crown and holding two scepters, sits on Edward the Confessor's throne, her clear blue eyes fixed straight ahead. Her mother, the Duchess of Kent, watches from the front of the royal box. 1 year earlier...
Sign it.
Are you sure that we're doing the right thing?
We've waited long enough. Now, for the last time, you will sign this order.
I will not sign it.
I say you will!
I say I will not!
How dare you, you...
Sir John!
Ledson, Victoria's nurse.
We were just... It's time for the princess's medicine.
Ledson moves towards Victoria's bed.
Shall I?
I'll do it.
Well, if you're sure.
The Duchess exchanges a look with Sir John Conroy, who hastily picks up the regency order.
Good night, my lady.
Good night, Mama.
Ledson scornfully watches Conroy and the Duchess leave and then leans fondly over Victoria, smoothing her brow. A liveried footman closes the gates to Kensington Palace, London. The young Victoria. In the grounds of King Leopold's Palace, Belgium, Leopold is with his advisor, Stockmar.
I've received a letter from England. My sister says Victoria once signed the order for her regency.
And why would she sign it? The princess is nearly 18. Why would she sign away her own powers?
Because she is an ignorant baby. Because she needs guidance and time to prepare for Aurora's queen. Until then, my sister will take her place as regent.
Sir John Conroy would be regent. Unfortunately, the Duchess is controlled by her controller. Maybe in your Majesty's interest to consider abandoning Conroy and your sister before it's too late and support the future queen instead. Of course, the Duchess won't like it.
Baron, I was born the younger son of a penniless duke. Now I'm king of the Belgians. Such journeys are not managed without hard decisions. Besides, who controls a young girl most? Now I'll go to Germany and finish my nephew's training.
The lawn of Rosenauer Castle, Coburg, Germany.
Albert!
A young man with windswept brown curls and a thin moustache lowers his archery bow and walks towards the black-coated baron.
I suppose you want to walk with me this afternoon? Really? Just the two of us alone? What would Mama say?
Princess Victoria's addressing an empty chair. Empty save for her black and white spaniel, whom she's drawing at an easel.
Hold still, or I'll never get your nose right.
Victoria has ringlets framing her delicate pale face and is wearing a dress with full sleeves. The dog tilts his head at her, then lies down on his paws.
Oh, I give up. I give up. You are impossible. You are impossible. You are impossible.
Victoria, your mother's waiting.
She strokes the dog's ears.
Come on.
She picks up her slippers.
Dash!
And comes through to the heavily ornate landing at the top of the stairs. She clasps hands with Ledson as she has always done, and the two of them go downstairs. On the halfway landing, Victoria does a little jump.
Where's the Duchess?
In the drawing room, Your Highness.
Victoria sweeps on alone towards the drawing room, where Conroy is standing over a map.
It would take them 3 days to arrive by coach from Coburg. Dashy.
How did you come downstairs?
I walked.
Not alone?
No, not alone. Ledson was with me.
She held your hand?
She did. Though why she still has to is
she
just...
still has to, because not everyone in England wishes you well.
Put the book down, please.
Victoria goes on leafing through a book, ignoring the hostile stares from the Duchess, her mother, and Conroy cuddling the dog.
England is the key to peace in Europe. Your uncle's throne is 6 years old and born of civil war. He only took the crown of Belgium because England pledged her support. And if he's to survive, he must have English force at his disposal. Favorite novels?
Handed a sketch of Victoria, Albert asks if she's that pretty in person.
English. Always English.
She has not read many novels. They were forbidden until last year.
But she did like...
The Bride of Lammermoor.
By?
Sir Walter Scott.
Other recreations?
Drawing. The famous dolls, of course. Piano. Music, generally. Though it's hard to believe she knows so little Schubert.
Never mind Schubert. She likes modern composers. Is she permitted the theatre?
Only the opera and ballet.
Which opera does she like best?
Norma.
I Puritani.
Victoria attends an opera performance.
In order to maintain control over Princess Victoria, Sir John and the Duchess keep her away from King William's court. Thus, when she does make a public appearance, her mere presence causes quite a stir.
All eyes are on the young princess. Victoria is mouthing the words.
You must win her favour before anyone else has the chance.
Albert swallows uncomfortably. In the bedroom, Victoria's playing with a doll. Her mother's standing in front of a mirror being attended to by a maid.
You still don't look well. Maybe we should go away for August.
No, Mama.
What do you mean, no?
We've already missed the Queen's birthday and we will not miss the King's. We have accepted. We're going.
Really, Victoria, don't issue orders to me. I'm not a servant.
Well, you've already disobeyed about the extra rooms. That's enough.
Are we to live like rabbits crammed in a hutch?
We do live in a palace, Mama. We're a lot better off than most people.
The rooms which I took were empty. Keeping us out of them was almost immoral. Mr. John says.
I knew he'd have a part in it.
My dearest child, he only wants what's best for you. I wish you could believe that.
The Duchess sits down at her dressing table.
I've invited the Coburg brothers to come and stay. You ought to know them better than you do.
Why?
Because you should. Uncle Leopold thinks that's a good idea.
The Duchess rounds on the maid, who's pinning her hair.
You stick one more pin in me, I swear, I will call the guard.
Your first visit will be the most important. We cannot have any mistakes. And always remember, you're first a Coburg.
King Leopold addresses his nephew, Ernst.
The King of the Belgians is a Coburg. The King of Portugal is a Coburg. The Queen of England's mother is a Coburg, and you are the next piece in the game. I'll go to England and make her smile.
Sir John Conroy comes down the steps of Kensington Palace to meet Ernst and Albert.
What if she wants to dance?
It's your first visit. She won't.
Albert, looking fearful, glances up at a window and sees that someone is watching. The two princes, both wearing caped coats, bow to Conroy.
Your Serene Highnesses, I bid you welcome to England.
Thank you.
I'm Sir John Conroy, controller of the Duchess's household. This way, please.
Victoria is watching from the upstairs window. She turns away and walks towards the door, stepping back for a moment to appraise her reflection in the mirror. Conroy walks ahead of the two princes.
The Duchess is in the drawing room.
A maid accompanies Victoria down the stairs just as the princes come into view.
May I present her royal...
Hello.
The visitors bow nervously.
I'm Ernst, ma'am. This is my brother, Albert.
Victoria immediately fixes Albert with a look. He shifts shyly.
I hope we haven't interrupted your studies.
No, not at all. How was your journey?
Long, but not too bad. We had plenty of books to keep us busy.
As a matter of fact, I passed the time reading The Bride of Lammermoor. By Sir Walter Scott.
Yes. Do you want to come and meet Mama?
As she sweeps off, Ernst thumps his brother. Two young men go towards the drawing room with Dash scurrying behind them. In the grounds, Conroy promenades with the Duchess, and across from them, Albert strolls with Victoria.
Of the modern composers, I suppose Vincenzo Bellini is my favourite.
What a coincidence. So is mine. Oh, which of his operas do you enjoy most? No, wait, let me guess. I Puritani?
As a matter of fact, yes.
I used to like it too. Now I prefer Norma. Dashie! Go fetch it! Fetch it, Dash!
Albert bends down to stroke the dog. Victoria watches him carefully.
Have I offended you in some way?
No.
Her face shrouded by a bonnet, Victoria turns away from him.
And Schubert. I like Schubert. I think perhaps you don't, but I do.
She smiles lightly.
I don't mind Schubert.
Good.
They continue their walk side by side, the pale blue satin ribbons on her bonnet fluttering in the breeze. In the evening, they play chess together in the drawing room. Sir John Conroy, the Duchess, her lady-in-waiting and Ernst, sitting across the room from them, watch their every move. Victoria turns to look at them with undisguised distaste. She directs her gaze at Albert.
Do you ever feel like a chess piece yourself? In a game being played against your will?
Do you?
Constantly. I see them leaning in and moving me around the board.
The Duchess and Sir John?
Not just them. Uncle Leopold. The king, sure half the politicians are ready to seize hold of my skirts and drag me from square to square.
Albert suppresses a smile.
then you had better master the rules of the game until you play it better than they can.
You don't recommend I find a husband to play it for me?
I should find one to play it with you, not for you.
Why don't we ring for some music and then we could dance? I've recently discovered the waltz and I am quite in love with it.
Waltzing is not really my forte.
Oh, dear. What a shame.
Albert shoots a nervous glance across at his brother.
You know the king wants me to marry my cousin George.
What's he like at chess?
He knocks over Victoria's piece. Conroy glances up from his paper. Albert also notices the looks from across the room. Later, Ledson accompanies Victoria upstairs.
Victoria!
Albert comes up behind them.
It's all right, Ledson. Albert can take me up. You'll have to hold my hand. Mama insists. I hope you don't mind.
Not in the least.
Ledson lets go, and Albert takes Victoria's hand.
What did you want to say?
Only that I understand more than you think of what your life is.
Do you?
My childhood wasn't easy either. I lost my mother when I was a boy.
I know, she died.
No, that is, she did die, eventually. But she was sent away long before that. There was some difficulty. It was all hushed up and no one talks of it now. But I know what it is to live alone inside your head, while never giving a clue as to your real feelings.
Did Uncle Leopold ask you to tell me that?
No. He actually told me never to mention it.
Well, how little he knows me.
They look steadily into each other's eyes and both glance down at Victoria's hand in his. She stiffly turns her head and they solemnly ascend the second part of the staircase.
May I write to you?
Victoria, with a delicate flower tiara in her hair and a pearl necklace adorning her cream lace gown, gives him a soft, gentle smile, and he bows down to kiss her hand. She turns away from him and goes. He descends the stairs, watched closely by Ledson, who's standing at the door of Victoria's quarters. Reaching the door, Victoria casts a last look in the young prince's direction. In her dressing room, she hurries to her mirror and removes her flower garland. Watson, the maid, unfastens the princess's dress.
I expect you'll miss the princess when they're gone, ma'am.
Don't be impertinent. Those boys pester you.
Oh, please, Ledson. You don't think I've come this far to walk straight into another jail, do you?
You must marry one day.
Well, I don't see why. And if I do, I shall please myself, not Mama or Uncle Leopold or the King or anyone else. Trust me.
Victoria, in her white short-sleeved bodice and long petticoat, swings Ledson round playfully. Albert is being taught to dance. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Face the window, face the wall. Your Serene Highness must learn to turn as you go, says the dancing master.
Must I? Yes, you must.
Be on your guard.
We are going to Windsor for my uncle's birthday party.
In the castle of the enemy.
Your enemy, Sir John, not mine.
Agree to nothing.
What should I say about the rooms?
You needed the space. Appeal to the Queen. It's ridiculous.
I wish you were coming with us.
Conroy directs his gaze at the Duchess as she follows Victoria into their carriage. He becomes aware of Ledson watching him.
You're very intent, Baroness. You're making a study of me.
Someone should.
The gates of Kensington Palace open. Albert and the dancing master waltz around the music room. Albert's shown a portrait.
Present Prime Minister.
Melbourne.
Lord Melbourne. Liberal leader who'll probably be in power when the princess succeeds. He may be troublesome.
Why?
Because he puts the interests of England above those of Europe.
Which is bad.
Which is not useful to us. he wouldn't spill one drop of English blood to save a foreign throne.
The Viscount Melbourne.
Ladies' heads turn as Lord Melbourne strides into Windsor Castle.
But why would he want to save a foreign throne if it wasn't in England's interest?
That is just the kind of thinking your Uncle Leopold is afraid of.
Carriages process along a leafy drive towards Windsor Castle for the King's birthday reception.
Which is why he is content to find his niece as the future Queen of England.
The Duke of Wellington.
In the public mind, the leader of the Conservative opposition is their pet hero, Napoleon's conqueror, the grand old Duke of Wellington.
But not in fact.
No. You're looking very good health, sir.
Thank you, sir.
I wish I was. Enjoy the meal.
Thank you.
The next Tory Prime Minister will be Sir Robert Peel.
And Lady Peel.
Who are presented to King William and Queen Adelaide.
Which side does Victoria favour?
She's a Liberal. Above all, she favours Lord Melbourne. And he'll take full advantage of it.
Melbourne surveys the room.
Her Royal Highness Princess Victoria of Kent.
Victoria, sweeping into the ballroom to pay her respects to her uncle and aunt, has Melbourne transfixed.
Her Royal Highness, the Duchess of Kent, the Lady Flora Hastings.
As the two ladies enter the ballroom, Victoria warmly kisses the King on the cheek. A lady whispers to Melbourne.
Look at that demure little head, and all of us wondering what's inside it.
We'll find out soon enough.
Lord Melbourne will make her fall in love with him. It's his method.
Don't underestimate Victoria.
Don't underestimate Melbourne.
My dearest niece, aren't you going to greet your cousin George?
Good evening, George.
How come my little niece and nephew have grown up so well? I wasn't looking.
Whereas you are quite unchanged and as handsome as ever.
I put my head very close to yours.
And speak softly. They'll suspect us of hatching a plot.
Yes, I look a little surprised. Well, then they'll know it.
I wish we saw more of you. But then nor you nor I are to blame for that.
The King looks pointedly at the Duchess.
The plain fact is, madam, you have stolen 17 rooms.
One cannot steal a room, sir. The rooms are where you left them. Now they are used, whereas before they were empty.
I see. So I have no say in my own palaces. Why not move in here and bring your Irish dinker with you? The Queen and I'll be happy enough in the lodge.
So would I be, sir, if I thought that people there would be polite to me.
How dare you!
Enough! We have exhausted the topic.
The Duchess swishes her skirts and trounces away from the King. Wellington.
You heard Conroy tried to force the Princess Victoria's agreement to a regency.
I gather she wouldn't sign it, sick as she was. That says something for the girl's spirit.
The white-haired King furiously gulps down a glass of wine. A butler checks the glasses on the banqueting table. At dinner, Victoria smiles fondly in the direction of the King, who seems to be lost in an unhappy reverie. Lord Melbourne is seated next to Victoria.
Your next birthday will be quite a landmark. I hope it means we'll see more of your court.
I hope so too, Lord Melbourne.
He glances slyly at the Duchess sitting further along the table.
You know, should you ever need an ally, you have one in me.
The Prime Minister has more important calls upon his time.
Not at all. I knew the late Duke of Kent. Naturally, I take an interest in his daughter.
You knew my father?
Yes. I'm sorry, is it difficult to speak of him?
No, I love to hear from someone who knew him, for I never did, you see.
Well, he was a great gentleman. Of that you can be sure.
Indeed I am.
Excellent company, like his brother the Regent, not quite so extravagant. And kind, like his brother the King. But perhaps not so talkative.
Well, you make him sound as though he were the best of them.
Oh, I think so, ma'am.
Wellington to the Duchess of Sutherland.
Your leader is hard at work, Duchess. See him hover with his net to catch the pretty butterfly.
And when your party is back in power, Duke, will you not do the same?
Well, nearly as well as Melbourne. Unfortunately, I have no small talk. Peel has no manners. And I would have a hard time praising her father. Most brutal officer I ever encountered.
William surveys the table with a heavy sigh. His vision blurring, he peers up at the minstrel's gallery. His eyes meet Victoria's smiling face, and then the po-faced and pouting Duchess of Kent. The king waves to a footman who signals to the musicians in the gallery. Rising slowly to his feet, the king raises his glass. The assembled company also rise to their feet. Limply waving his hand, the king motions for everyone to sit down again. Queen Adelaide smiles grimly.
I thank you for your good wishes on my birthday. It has been a long life and an interesting one. But I shall be content with only a short while more. Just enough to dispense with any thought of a regency, so that I may pass the royal authority directed to that young lady. And not to the hands of a person now near me who is surrounded by evil advisers and who cannot act with propriety in the station in which she's been placed. I have been insulted, grossly and continually insulted. She has kept her daughter, my brother's child, from my court. But from now on, I'd have her know that I am king, and I will not be flouted or disobeyed by her or by that candidate she keeps about her.
The Duchess of Kent storms away from the table. The king slumps in his seat. Melbourne leans towards Victoria.
Are you all right?
She nods bravely. Wellington.
Families would be without them.
The king sips his wine with satisfaction. Both Victoria and Queen Adelaide look around the table fearfully. At home in Kensington Palace, Victoria, in her nightgown, sits curled up at her writing table. She stands up and crosses to a window, idly running a forefinger over a leaded pane. At Rosenau, Ernst asks Albert if there's any news from England.
It was nice as England.
Albert slumps down glumly at his chess table.
Are you listening?
What?
Ernst shakes his head with amusement. At Kensington Palace, Watson walks briskly towards the staircase just as Victoria and a maid reach the bottom step. The princess hurries over with an eager smile.
Well? It was a messenger, Mum, and you do have a letter, but it's not from Germany. It's from the King.
So it is. Thank you, Watson.
Victoria takes the letter and goes through to the drawing room. Conroy slams down the King's letter.
Don't you see what he wants?
He increases my income once I'm 18 and he asks to see me at court. What is wrong with that?
The King wants to separate you from your mother. He wants to control you. To take you from those whose sole aim is trying to protect you.
There's no need to shout, Sir John. I'm sure the people of London will find out our business soon enough without hearing it from your lips.
Tell her. Make her understand.
What Sir John means is that you are unprepared for the task ahead of you.
And if I am, whose fault is that?
You're too young! You've no experience. You're like a china doll walking over a precipice.
Well, then I must smash, for it's too late to mend my ways now. So if you'll excuse me...
But I will not excuse you now. This is what you will do. First, you will refuse the money and demand instead that it be given to your mother. Next, you will appoint me your private secretary from today. Finally, you will agree to be co-regent with the Duchess until your 25th birthday. Neither she nor I will accept less.
You may do what you like with the money. Now get out of my way!
Victoria throws off Conroy's restraining hand and calmly makes her way to the door.
Oh, and if you think that I will ever forget that you just stood by silent and you watched him treat me thus, you are dreaming.
A As Ledzen follows Victoria out, Conroy kicks out at the dog and slams the door. Unaccompanied, Victoria goes to her room. Servants gather in the hall. Victoria hurls a cushion at the wall. Downstairs, Conroy paces. At Windsor, Melbourne attends the King and Queen.
Is there no limit to this disobedience? Mark my words, the reign of King Conroy is coming!
My poor sister-in-law, what is the hold that wicked man has over her?
What about her uncle in Brussels? Could he not be of some assistance?
If Leopold was as slippery as a barrel full of eels, if he did dislodge Conroy, it would only be to tighten his own grip on the girl.
Melbourne smooths his blonde curls.
Mightn't there be some benefit if I pay Princess Victoria a visit before Conroy has a chance to usurp her?
Very well. Lord, in your mercy, get me past May. That way she'll be of age and will have killed off the Regency at least.
Queen Adelaide looks concerned. At Kensington...
I tell you, Lord Melbourne, his behaviour to me makes it impossible to keep him in any post near my person. Any post whatever.
You don't think it more dangerous to cut him loose?
I know things that mean I could never have confidence in him. Now, I see I must endure Lady Flora. Mama can hardly appear at court without a lady in waiting, but I draw the line at Conroy. And once I am queen, I do not wish to look upon his face again.
Well, we can't prevent the Duchess from keeping him in charge of her own affairs.
That would be her mistake, not mine.
Albert, seated at his writing desk.
My dear Victoria, when I think... Dearest Victoria, if ever you should need...
As Albert discards another attempt at a letter, his brother appears at the door. Shouldn't you go over there, he suggests.
What, like a vulture? To hover at the edge until the king is dead?
And ma'am, you needn't worry. I'll be your private secretary. For now, at least.
Thank you, Lord Melbourne. That is a great comfort to me.
Oh, when I told this, then give this me a
hand. Earnest English, please.
When he is dead, there'll be more than one vulture to contend with.
We should consider... the new appointments, your ladies-in-waiting and so forth. Perhaps the Duchess of Sutherland for Mistress of the Rose.
Oh, I don't really know her.
Well, as to that, ma'am, she's a dear friend of mine. You'll enjoy her enormously.
I should be lost without your guidance. I hope you know how grateful I am.
I'll draw up a list.
What is it? Don't you like her?
Yes, I like her. More than I dared hope. But it's not up to me, is it? What do you call a man who waits for a rich woman to decide whether or not she wants him?
Ernst, biting on a slice of apple, smiles glibly. Albert shrugs with resignation. Left alone, Victoria hugs a cushion.
Then why not tell her how you feel?
Albert, his face bathed by warm candlelight, picks up his pen and Victoria reads his words.
My dear Victoria... these days will be full of sadness since I know the king is dear to you. Will you allow me to offer my support, albeit at a distance? If I cannot be with you, then I pray you will hear my voice in the music that I send. You know my love of Schubert. This is his swan song, and I play it with you in my heart.
King Leopold and Stockmar.
Is he ready?
Well, he may be, but she isn't. Let her enjoy succession and the freedom it'll bring. We must wait for disillusion and the loneliness that follows.
Windsor Castle, June the 18th, 1837, 3:30 a.m. The Duchess of Kent watches from an upstairs window as a carriage departs. With a candle in her hand, she crosses to Victoria, who's fast asleep in bed. She strokes her daughter's cheek and Victoria slowly stirs.
You must come now.
Holding her mother's hand, Victoria, dressed in her nightgown, somberly descends the heavily carved oak staircase. In the drawing room, the Lord Chamberlain and a page kneel before her. The Lord Chamberlain kisses her hand.
Long live the Queen.
Ledson waits outside in the antechamber with the Duchess and Flora, her lady-in-waiting. Victoria steps past them, then turns to face them.
I'm going back to bed. I imagine Lord Melbourne will be here quite early. Ledson, would you make sure he has everything he needs if I am not ready to receive him?
Of course, Your Royal. Your Majesty.
Ledson curtsies, followed by Flora and somewhat reluctantly the Duchess.
Victoria, wait. I will hold your hand.
No, thank you, Mama. And Ledson, in the morning, could you arrange for my bed to be moved into a room of my own?
Surely there's no need for
it. As soon as possible, Ledson.
Her long dark hair loose down her back, Victoria climbs the stairs alone. On the upper floor, she steps in front of a mirror and contemplates her reflection with a look of trepidation. In the morning, Watson and a second maid dress her in black. The Duchess of Sutherland and Ledson attend her.
The council is assembled, Your Majesty.
Victoria walks past them, keeping her back straight, with a look of resolve on her face. A bewigged footman bows as she passes him. A second footman bows as she enters a wood-panelled antechamber where the Lord Chamberlain is waiting for her outside a door guarded by two footmen. Victoria is shown into the council chamber.
Her Majesty the Queen.
The Privy Councillors, among them Lord Melbourne, bow to her as she moves past them, taking her place in the carved wooden throne at the head of the council chamber, where she's presented with a leather-bound portfolio. All eyes are on her as she prepares to read.
It is with a sense of reverence and honour that I address you, my Privy Councillors, as your sovereign and queen. I mourn sincerely the death of my dear uncle the King, but I know I may count on you to serve me as loyally as you served him.
Her written address is taken from her and she looks up at the largely elderly male faces assembled before her.
I am young, but I am willing to learn. And I mean to devote my life to the service of my country and my people. I look for your help in this. I know I shall not be disappointed. Thank you.
The councillors bow their heads. As the first of them steps forward to pay his respects, Sir Robert Peel turns to Melbourne.
She starts on your watch, Lord Melbourne. Guard her well and keep her safe from harm.
The Duchess of Sutherland curtsies as the Queen comes out of the council chamber. Victoria faces her and lets out a deep sigh, followed by a playful smile as she runs and skips down the corridor. At Rosenau, Stockmar hands Albert a letter.
As a matter of interest, will a time come when I read them first?
You'll enjoy this. She has a real flair for description.
Guards in bearskins stand to attention.
Dearest Albert, on Tuesday I went to inspect Buckingham Palace. It is only just finished and I shall be the very first sovereign to live there.
Victoria, dressed in black, peers up at the magnificent palace.
As I stepped out of the carriage, for the first time in my life, I felt freedom.
The Lord Chamberlain leads Victoria and the Duchess of Sutherland through the light, spacious palace. Victoria looks up in awe.
Splendid, is it not?
Yes.
Queen Adelaide.
You'll have to decide on a husband soon. What about Leopold's candidate?
I can't marry the man they want me to marry.
Every suitor will come with strings attached.
Can't I be my own mistress for a while? Haven't I earned it? Dear Lord M, he's so very kind. I couldn't have asked for a better tutor.
You may dream of independence, but you won't get it. From now on, everyone will push you and pull you for their own advantage. Melbourne more than the rest. Just remember, you are the queen. He's a politician. And politicians, whatever their creed, always resent the monarchy. They pass through, you stay. So just keep dear Lord M in his proper sphere.
He's already chosen the new household. About my ladies-in-waiting.
Yes, I'll have a list brought over to you later today. They've all accepted.
Only my aunt advised me not to be too partisan in my choice.
With respect, Your Majesty, I think I understand these things at least as well as the Queen Dowager.
I know that, of course.
We want our friends around us, of course, surely, as we begin our labours. We don't want to find Sir John Conroy sneaking his feet back under the table.
No, not if we have to line up every friend we both possess.
Well, quite, ma'am. It's very cold in here. Why haven't they lit the fires?
Well, it seems the fires are laid by the Lord Steward's department, but lit by the Lord Chamberlain's, and no one knows which footman should do it. It's not very sensible.
Well, if that's the way things are done, I shouldn't meddle.
We must improve where we can. If I've discovered anything from touring England, it's the suffering that needs my help.
Oh, never try to do good, Your Majesty. It always leads to terrible scrapes.
Lord Melbourne, that is not what is preached from the pulpit.
No, it's not, and that's exactly why I never go to church. One always hears the most extraordinary things.
Melbourne's eye lights on a letter lying on the carpet. He picks it up and very deliberately places it on her writing table, noting Albert's signature.
I've made no promise to him. But sometimes I feel quite alone in the world.
Never while I am here, Your Majesty.
He scratches Dash's neck. Victoria writes.
Lord Melbourne is akin to a miracle. He has proved to be most generous and sensitive, quite wondrous in a politician. Someone I trust and hold dear. He is the best company imaginable. Sometimes we laugh so much it's as if we were naughty children.
Victoria pushes over a doll.
Oh, Albert, I so look forward to the day when you can know and value him, as I do.
Stockmar reads her letter and then reseals it.
Yours affectionately, Victoria.
Albert throws down her letter with visible displeasure.
Plenty of praise for Lord Melbourne and not much of anything else.
Everything comes to he who waits.
And if nothing comes, what then? You've played with me, Baron. And now it is enough. I'm going back to England.
There must be a reason if you wish to visit Her Majesty.
Then find me a reason.
Albert, in light brown travelling clothes, steps towards his carriage.
So, are you going to propose?
Albert averts his eyes from Brother Ernst.
What am I supposed to think? You're going to London to enjoy the weather?
I'm going to spend some time with her, that's all. Besides, I'm forbidden. It has to come from her, apparently. So I could not propose, even if I wanted to.
Do you want to?
Ernst pushes his brother fondly into the carriage. The carriage moves off into the night. In the formal gardens of Kensington Palace, adorned with conical box hedges, Victoria is sketching.
Please hold still. I'm afraid I always find noses a challenge.
Albert is her subject.
Am I permitted to talk?
Yes, but you can't move.
He nods obediently.
There's nothing to rival an English garden.
Of all my life in Kensington, it's the only part I'll miss.
But the gardens at Buckingham Palace, surely...
You're moving. Oh. Now you're smiling.
She smiles as he tries to put on a straight face.
Impossible, you're worse than him.
Dash, his furry nose firmly on the ground, blinks innocently.
I believe we have a duty to those in need of our protection. It is the business of every sovereign to champion the dispossessed, for no one else will. Take housing. May I show you?
Albert picks up her sketch paper and sits next to her.
Industry is expanding so fast that people are not considering where the workers will live. But I've been experimenting. By building these in units of two, you can build safe, clean homes for two families for less than the cost. I'm sorry, I don't mean to preach.
No, there's no need to apologize for being passionate. It seems I have a lot to learn. With all my duties, and I do take them very seriously.
I know you do.
But there are plenty of people who will expect me to fail. And there are even more trying to take advantage of my youth and inexperience.
Then they don't know you like I do.
She glances at his sketch of a housing unit.
May I keep this?
Smiling faintly, he signs it with a flourish. They stroll along a shaded path. Elsewhere in the grounds, Victoria draws back an archery bow and Albert instructs her how to hold it.
So remember, the first thing is to find an anchor point. So take your handbag to beneath your chin. Good. This is where it will come every time. Now release the bow. Your hand must cover the leather like this. Mm-hmm. And make a firm claw. One finger, two fingers.
Claw.
Yes, and back to beneath the chin. Bend this arm slightly and rotate to catch the arrow. Good. Very good. Now try with an arrow.
They stand together with Albert leaning in to check her grip. She glances up and notices Conroy passing by. He stops to tip his top hat. Albert looks round and sees him.
He's still here?
At my mother's insistence. Certainly not mine.
Conroy and the Duchess with Lord Melbourne.
Where am I to live? Am I to be abandoned here? Or am I to beg along the highways for a crust?
Come now. You will move into the palace with the Queen. But she has arranged a separate apartment for you. It will allow you both more privacy.
I don't want privacy from my own child.
Surely to exclude us entirely will launch the new reign in a cloud of scandal.
I know your game, my lord. You want to be her father, her mother, and who knows what else.
If I'm not to be her private secretary, there must be something else.
I'm sorry. I can see that I am not speaking clearly. You have played the game and lost.
Melbourne looks at them with ice-cold eyes. Victoria appears.
The Prime Minister is here, Your Majesty.
Thank you, Duchess. Have I ever thanked you properly for accepting the post? I'm afraid it will involve a good deal of inconvenience.
Being Mistress of the Robes is a great honour, ma'am. I'm only anxious to prove worthy of it.
My Lord Melbourne thinks she'll be perfect.
Victoria whips off a black shawl, hands it to the Duchess of Sutherland, and goes into an adjoining room. The Duchess smirks and goes.
How is Albert's visit going?
He writes that Victoria is still under Melbourne's control. The prince is frustrated.
Then he must stay in England until the Queen thinks more of him than she does of Melbourne.
Queen Elizabeth never married. It didn't spoil things for her. Are you familiar with the coronation chair and the ancient stone of Scone?
Familiar, yes. But quite in awe. I'm terribly afraid of disappointing on the day I so want to do it perfectly.
Westminster Abbey, 1 week before the coronation.
Just be yourself. Your instincts are always to your credit.
Victoria notices some workmen looking at her.
Yes, I'm sorry, ma'am. They're preparing the abbey for the ceremony. I'm told they asked permission for a glimpse of Your Majesty.
Don't be sorry.
God bless Your Majesty.
I do want to help them, whatever you say. And not just the labouring poor, but the hungry and the homeless. There are people who are lost, and whose business is it to see to their welfare?
Well, in my experience, ma'am, it's best to let these things develop naturally. If you interfere, you risk overturning the cart.
Well, Prince Albert doesn't agree. He's made a study of the working man's condition. He's full to the brim with ideas for their improvement.
Is he indeed? How inspiring. Well, good. He sounds like a young man ready to take charge at the first opportunity.
With a cool smile, Victoria turns away. In bed, she remembers what Albert said to her when they first played chess.
Then you had better master the rules of the game until you play it better than they can.
She sees his shy smile and shining eyes watching her as she goes to make a move.
Are you quite sure about that, ma'am?
Melbourne looks across at Leopold and Stockmar.
Make your move.
Conroy grabs her roughly by the wrist. She wakes from her bad dream. Conroy, in his black coat, stands with his arms outstretched like a bat in flight, looking at himself in a mirror above a mantelpiece. He turns his malevolent face towards the Duchess of Kent.
Well?
She tilts her head and steps towards him.
You may not accompany me to the proclamation ceremony. You may not attend the coronation.
Albert is at the coronation. He sees Melbourne mouth the word perfect at the new queen, who remembers her mother and Conroy's words.
You are unprepared.
No experience. You're too young.
Then they don't know you like I do.
She turns her head towards Albert and meets his smiling gaze. At Buckingham Palace, Conroy, in his shirt sleeves, strides sullenly past the tall windows of the elegant music room with a brandy glass in hand. He drains the glass and lashes out with his leg, kicking over a piece of furniture. He tosses away the glass, grabs his coat and goes. Victoria's cleaning Dash's fur. Melbourne seems taken aback.
Don't look so surprised. A queen has many different duties.
Well, it's heartening to see she won't neglect the least of them, even on coronation day.
I don't think Dash would allow it.
Try to get some rest before the ball.
I will, since I firmly intend to dance until dawn.
She twirls round with Dash in her arms. An orchestra tunes up to play from the opera L'Elysée d'Amour.
Her Majesty the Queen!
Victoria enters the ballroom with her ladies-in-waiting behind her and two officers of the realm preceding her, walking backwards. She wears a yellow satin gown with puffed sleeves edged with lace, a red sash around her waist, red roses trimming her scooped neckline and adorning her hair. She smiles softly. Everyone else seems to melt away. As if floating on air, she moves towards the centre of the ballroom. Albert steps towards her and bows. She curtsies.
You sure this is wise?
He bows his head again and kisses her white-gloved hand. They sway from side to side, her left hand in his right. He steps forward, takes her right hand in his left, sliding his other hand around her waist, as they start to waltz. Victoria smiles happily as they turn in a succession of small, evenly paced circles, gazing into each other's eyes. Albert raises his left hand, she raises her left hand, and they form an arch above their heads as they continue to turn, their right hands around each other's waists. They let go and their arms sink back down in dreamlike slowness. She rests her left hand on his shoulder. He clasps her other hand as if they were the only two people in the room. Other couples have taken to the floor, but on they dance, chatting companionably, making each other laugh. Melbourne, watching them from the sidelines, glances at the Dowager Queen and her sister-in-law, the Duchess of Kent, both of whom are observing the growing affection between Victoria and Albert. As the music ends, Victoria curtsies to Albert, who bows to her.
It's been quite a day. Are you tired?
Oh, no. Not really. It's just... Well, I'm stronger than I look. How much longer are you in London?
Only until Friday. Then home via Brussels. Uncle Leopold must have his report.
Oh dear, I have a quadrille with the Prince of Prussia next. My poor little toes, I feel sorry for them already.
The Prince of Prussia bows to the Queen and she graciously takes his hand. She catches Albert's eye watching her and giggles playfully. As the quadrille begins, Melbourne makes a deliberate low bow to Albert. In the grounds of the palace...
I've had a letter from King Leopold. He proposes extending this visit to Prince Albert.
And what have you answered?
Nothing yet.
Well, perhaps you should tell your uncle you need to focus on your new duties right now.
Albert and Victoria run into a columned gazebo to shelter from the rain.
Thank you for being my messenger. I hope I've given my uncle enough detail. You can fill in anything that I've missed.
He takes a great interest in you.
Yes, don't I know it? You see the questions he asks by every letter. It's like this never-ending examination. Lord Melbourne calls him this.
What about Lord Melbourne?
Nothing. The French ambassador is here, ma'am. Right. I wish you a good journey.
They look at each other longingly. Then Victoria turns to go.
Victoria. I would so like to be useful to you. If there is ever an opportunity.
I know you would. But not yet.
Albert sighs deeply. As she walks off in the rain towards the palace with her two ladies in waiting, he stands watching her with his hands behind his back. In bed, he reads her letter. He sees himself coming through a door and Victoria throwing herself in his arms. In his mind, he caresses her shining black hair. King Leopold addresses him.
Have you read this?
No, sir.
It seems she does not think it appropriate to discuss politics in our otherwise delightful correspondence.
Which was dictated by Melbourne.
Damn it! Do something.
I can't get past Melbourne for now.
Then get him past Melbourne! Get him into her bed!
My dear Victoria, Uncle Leopold is full of ideas of how you and I may spend more time together. And I must say, I hope that some of them, at least, will come to pass.
Albert, hearing the doorbell, throws down the book he's reading and skitters along the landing and down the stairs to the hall, where the butler is sorting through the post. Anything for me, Gumbenholz, he asks. There is, Your Serene Highness. I'll take it myself, thank you.
Ich nehm's, danke.
Dear Albert, you've been keeping secrets. When did you learn to dance so beautifully? Lord M assures me the next several months will be particularly grueling and busy for me as a new queen. Thus, I am not certain when I shall see you again.
Victoria is dressing for a dinner.
I look forward to your every letter, enjoying the detail of life in Germany and wishing to share more.
Wellington demonstrates a yo-yo.
Waterloo.
Yours affectionately, Victoria.
Ah, this quite inoffensive little game can turn into an effective weapon.
He jerks it at a guest.
Lord Melbourne says French doctors kill their patients. English ones just let them die.
I rather thought he might be here tonight.
Oh, he's thrown me over for Lady Holland.
I expect Your Majesty will miss him.
Not too severely. He'll be back tomorrow.
No. I meant when he's out of power.
What?
Well, only I don't wish to crow, but I thought it was common knowledge that he's about to lose the vote.
Victoria's face clouds over. Her mother remains impassive. Later, Ledson appears at the door of Victoria's drawing room with a pot of coffee.
Schatzi, I thought you were in your bedroom.
Ledson puts down the tray and crosses to her mistress, who is weeping.
Never mind.
The Duchess of Kent peeps through the door of Victoria's apartment.
You won't desert me, will you?
Never. My liebes Schatz.
She sees Ledson hug Victoria. The Duchess creeps away. Victoria's with Sir Robert Peel.
Every one of your ladies is the wife of a friend of Lord Melbourne. Surely you can see how that looks.
You should not set such store by appearances, Sir Robert.
I'm only asking for a token, ma'am. For two ladies, maybe even one who supports my cause. Otherwise, it must seem as if Palace and Parliament have fallen out.
I want to go in.
I beg your pardon, ma'am, but Her Majesty is with the Prime Minister and cannot be disturbed.
But that will not apply to her mother.
I'm very sorry, ma'am.
Let me understand you. Are you telling me it is now the Prime Minister who selects my household? Has the law changed in this regard?
No, of course not, ma'am.
Well, then there cannot be much more to be said on the subject.
Peel is left speechless.
Good day, Sir Robert.
He rises to his feet and bows stiffly.
Could you please ask Lady Portman to come in as you leave?
Yes, ma'am.
Peel withdraws, walking backwards. Victoria seems amused.
I wonder if you could have a note delivered to Lord Melbourne.
Of course, ma'am.
Lady Portman curtsies and goes. Victoria, kicking up her legs, slumps back on the settee. A demon conjures up smoke on stage. The Queen and Melbourne are in the royal box.
Mrs. Melbourne!
All eyes turn to the Queen, even those of the castrato on stage.
Good God, what are we coming to?
Who was it? I didn't see.
Melbourne spots a woman smirking.
The Duchess of Montrose. That's the end of her career at court, I hope.
If I ban everyone who thinks me wrong, you and I will be alone in the ballroom.
In Parliament, Peel is at the dispatch box, Melbourne in the gallery.
With sorrow, I must inform the House that I have been unable to persuade the Queen that her ladies should not solely adhere to the views of my political opponents. I have therefore informed Her Majesty that I am not qualified to form a government if I do not enjoy her confidence.
A member of the opposition.
Are we to understand that the great Sir Robert Peel has been frightened off by a few frilly petticoats? Prime Minister! Mr. Speaker, what frightens me is to see the crown used as a shuttlecock in the game of politics.
Which apparently Lord Melbourne plays better than you, sir.
Constitutional crisis!
Order!
Order!
You should be ashamed of yourself, sir. If the Queen has been foolish, she complete her youth. You are old enough to know better.
What troubles you is that Lord Melbourne is Prime Minister again. I do hate a bad loser.
We're all losers in this, sir. Most especially the Queen.
You have to understand, you reign by right of Parliament and you must work with the voters' choice.
Well, Lord Melbourne
Lord
says
Melbourne
that
says
is...
what suits his interest. He has used you to punish his enemies without a thought for the damage to the crown.
The Queen is in the clutches of Melbourne, the great seducer. And when he is silent, who does she listen to? A German mother.
I'm glad he thinks I listen to Mama.
Queen Adelaide.
You are confusing stubbornness with strength, my dear. And I warn you, the people will not like you for it.
Protesters line the gates of Buckingham Palace. Ernst and Albert at Rosenau.
She's brought down a government over a handful of ladies.
Apparently.
And she's a fool.
No, she is not a fool. But she has listened to a fool.
And she had better change her advisor. Things will get worse before they get better.
Conroy strides down a hallway at Buckingham Palace, stopping outside the doors to the music room, where Victoria's with her ladies-in-waiting listening to a reading. The footmen ignore him.
Open the door.
But all the water in the rough, rude sea can wash the balm off from an anointed king. Breath of worldly men cannot depose the deputy elected by the Lord.
Conroy steps inside. The Duchess of Sutherland rises to attend him.
Every man
Sir John, what on earth are you doing here?
I must speak to the Queen.
No, that's quite impossible.
Victoria sees Conroy whispering to the Duchess.
Lies your power!
An armed man has been found in the gardens.
What?
He said he wished to harm the Queen.
Discomfort guides my tongue and bids me speak of nothing but discomfort.
A window shatters. Outside, the mob's anger has risen to fever pitch. In Germany, Leopold, Albert and Stockmar look at the report of the riot in the Times newspaper. In London, Victoria's with Watson, the maid.
They think I have interfered in matters that do not concern me.
Watson, standing behind her, pats Victoria's shoulder.
They'll pass, ma'am, you'll see.
Albert writes a letter.
My dear Victoria, while these days may feel endless, please do not lose faith in yourself or your people. We are all allowed to make mistakes, most especially when we have looked to others for guidance.
The storm still rages outside the palace walls. I wonder now if everyone was right. Perhaps I am too young and inexperienced for my position.
Open your mind, examine your choices, and your honesty will take you through the storm. I promise that you can do this work and do it well. You have courage and heart, and you said yourself, you're stronger than you look.
Victoria, sitting on her canopied bed with Dash next to her, finishes reading Albert's words. Ledson.
A letter from your mother.
My dearest child, you will not let me come to you, and that I may deserve. But however you resent me, however I have failed, I am still and always your mother. What troubles you troubles me. What pleases you pleases me. I love you. And my only prayer is that one day you will understand how much. Good night, mein Liebling. Your own mama.
Victoria, sitting at her dressing table, dissolves into tears. Albert walks along a colonnade with a letter.
My dearest Albert, you asked me once if you could be of help to me. And I, so proud and confident of my great powers, replied, not yet. But since that day, so much has changed.
Victoria sits at her piano with Dash in her arms. Riding in her carriage with Melbourne, she's aware of hostile looks from passers-by.
I'm not forgiven yet.
Not yet, but soon. Just wait for unseasonal weather or news or some elopement, and it'll all be forgotten.
You don't have a very high opinion of ordinary people, do you, Lord Melbourne?
With respect, I have lived longer than your Majesty.
I said once I didn't understand whose task it was to see to the public welfare.
Ma'am, in my lifetime, I have seen with my own eyes what happens when the rabble is in power.
Lord Melbourne, I want a report on living conditions, on parish benefits, housing, all of it. And by the end of the month. And one more thing. I have invited Prince Albert for another visit.
Very good, Your Majesty.
Ernst.
When you get there, don't be a spy or Uncle Leopold's puppet. It's your life, Albert. Live it for yourself and for Victoria.
Our uncle wouldn't thank you for that.
I don't care.
Followed by her retinue of ladies, Victoria sweeps through a door guarded by two beefeaters.
I should have worn the red.
You look beautiful, Your Majesty.
Victoria glances at Ledson and seems reassured.
His Serene Highness, Prince Albert of Saxe-Coburg and Gotha, Your Majesty.
The Lord Chamberlain steps to one side and Albert, in a short navy jacket over cream breeches and knee-length black boots, strides in flanked by two greyhounds. Victoria, with a simple floral arrangement in her hair, watches him with a calm, serene expression. Their eyes meet for a moment, then Albert bows respectfully. Victoria's face lights up as a faint smile comes to her lips. A little later, in her private drawing room, she settles on a seat facing the door and watches Albert let himself in, fidgeting with his gloves.
I only just got your note. I was writing.
Sit, please.
He sits next to her on the blue damask seat.
The park is marvellous.
So pleased you like it. I do want you to feel quite at home.
Albert looks up into her face.
I'm sure you're aware why I wished you to come here. Because it would make me happier than anything. Too happy, really, if you would agree to what I wish.
And stay with you.
And stay with me.
And marry you.
And marry me.
They both stand and fall into each other's arms. Albert steps back to look at her, and they kiss. Lord Melbourne precedes Victoria down the aisle. She follows in an ivory wedding gown and a garland of flowers in her hair on the arm of an elderly lord. Her right hand is placed into Albert's hand, and they face each other.
Wilt thou have this room for thy wedding? To live together after God's holiness.
I will.
On the marital bed, Victoria leans towards Albert and kisses him. He sits by her, his hands clasped on his lap. Tentatively, he moves nearer, cupping her face in one hand and drawing her to him with the other, searching out her lips, caressing her bare shoulder. They kiss again. She kneels up, presses herself against him, and their kiss deepens. Next morning, as Albert lies asleep in the bed, Victoria slips her hand into the front of his shirt. He stirs and they smile at each other. She snuggles down next to him.
Now I am quite married.
You know, when we're old, surrounded by our children, we will remember this as the day our lives began.
Not too surrounded, please.
Raising herself up onto her elbows, she pins his hands back.
Not too soon.
I should warn you that I am expecting a very large family.
He strokes her cheek with his finger.
Good morning, wife.
Good morning.
They kiss again. Watson, collecting linen from a chest of drawers outside the bedroom, stops and giggles.
Have you woken Her Majesty?
No, Mum.
Don't you think you should?
No, Mum. Not this morning, I don't.
As Watson walks off down the elegant antechamber flanked by bronze statues, Ledson looks sourly towards the royal bedroom door.
Let's take a little tour together and visit Scotland. I hear if any part of Britain is like Germany, it's the Highlands of Scotland.
Yes, we must one day.
No, I mean straight away now.
Now?
Only for a few weeks. You're a bride. They can't expect you back before that.
Dearest, I may be a bride, but I'm also a queen. I cannot be away for more than 3 days at the most.
He starts pulling off the stocking he had just put on her.
What are you doing?
Well, if we've only got 3 days.
They ride in the rain at Windsor.
So tell me, will the weather be this fine for all of the 3 days?
Yes.
Sheltering under a tree, Albert removes his top hat and kisses his bride, and she takes off her riding hat.
Albert, where are you going?
He runs off into the rain, tosses his hat to the ground, and starts to sway from side to side. Victoria runs to him, tosses her hat away, and leaps into his arms. Hand in hand, they run towards a flock of sheep, and Albert falls flat on his face. Later, they ride back.
But seriously, is it always like this?
Yes!
Soaked to the skin, they come into their private sitting room and Albert, shaking off his wet hands, starts taking off his frock coat. From across the room, Victoria, watching him with unbridled love, turns away for a second as if to contain her emotion. He stands with his back to her, his wet shirt clinging to his back. She steps towards him and wraps her arms around his chest. He turns to face her and pulls her towards him. As she unties his neck scarf and undoes the buttons of his shirt, he watches her with rapt attention and shining eyes.
We will take care of each other, won't we?
Always.
They kiss. He unties her black satin neck scarf and tosses it to the floor. In the music room, Conroy looks broodily through a window at the crowds below.
How changeable they are. They hate you, they love you, they hate you.
They punished her. They never hated her.
The Duchess of Kent throws down a letter.
And now she's a bride and back on top. Until the next mistake. What on earth have I done with my life? I had many gifts, you know. As a boy, I was tipped for success.
You have served me well.
He turns to look at her, then bitterly gulps down his drink.
What is that?
The Duchess walks away. At night in the palace, Victoria lies in bed. Albert comes through the door, whips off his dressing gown and jumps into bed with a broad smile.
Dear Albert, why haven't you responded to my last two letters? I must be kept informed of your progress. I need help, England's help, and you must and will secure it for me. Never forget that you're first a Coburg. Your uncle, Leopold.
In the day room, Victoria sits at her desk. Her ladies in waiting do needlework. Dash jumps onto Albert's lap. Ledson watches him put the dog on the floor.
What is it? Just a question for Lord M.
Could I help?
It'll keep.
Victoria notices Albert wandering restlessly over to a window. He peers at the glass.
Why are these windows so dirty? I can hardly see out.
Same as the fires, I'm afraid. The departments can't agree to wash inside and out at the same time.
Then why don't we do something about it?
I quite agree. Because that's the way things are done here. And it's worked well for many years.
Meanwhile, we live in a filthy, freezing house.
We live as guests of the Queen.
Thank you, Baroness, for reminding me that I am a guest here.
Ledson smiles smugly at the Prince. Victoria silently observes the hostility between them. Albert leaves the room.
Let him go.
Victoria's with Queen Adelaide.
How is Albert settling in? Why, what have you heard?
Adelaide's face speaks volumes. They sit down on a bench.
He says he wants to reorganise the way the palaces are run. Well then, for heaven's sake, let him. He says that Lord Melbourne controls me, and he says that Ledson controls me. It seems that everyone controls me except him.
A man who has no work becomes ridiculous. And a poor man with a rich wife must work twice as hard as anyone else. Besides, you have chosen well.
My Uncle William chose well. You did not take on half his duties.
You don't know that. You don't know what I did.
The two women sit back and raise their faces to the sunshine. Albert steps into a small dining room.
What is this for?
Your Royal Highness. The Red Room dinner service, sir, for the officers guarding the King.
What King?
King George III, sir.
And how often do we provide this dinner for a king who has been dead for 20 years?
Every night, sir.
Albert's eyebrow shoots up. He summons Conroy and the Duchess.
I cannot believe I'm being subjected to this interrogation.
You're not being subjected to anything, Sir John. You have been in charge of the Duchess's finances for many years. Indeed, you have made public statements testifying to their health.
Yes, I have.
I am so grateful.
All I am asking is that you will be so good as to tell us exactly where the money has gone.
Conroy and the Duchess exchange an uneasy glance. In the marital bedroom, Albert stands facing Victoria.
Are you sure?
She nods faintly. He moves towards her and drops to one knee, placing his hands on her tummy. He kisses her waist. And hugs her to him.
Congratulations, ma'am.
I'm so happy.
Adelaide kisses Victoria and then the Duchess steps forward.
Heavens, Mama, don't crush me.
You let me know at once if there's anything you need.
The Duchess, rebuffed, picks up her skirts and goes to the door. Albert follows her.
You're not going already.
Cannot leave too soon for my daughter. Anyway, I have a lot on my mind.
Something I could help with.
Her sour face softens into a smile and she touches Albert's cheek.
Congratulations.
Melbourne has observed this exchange.
Your Highness, there's your opening, if you'll take my advice.
Lord Melbourne, forgive me, but you seem to have confused me with a member of your club. I am not your drinking companion, nor your whist partner. I am the husband of your sovereign. And as such, I will make my own decisions. And I neither seek nor invite your advice. Good evening.
With a polite smile, Albert turns away from Melbourne and joins the ladies.
So, I'm discussing names.
Discussing what the hell?
He writes that he prefer not to talk politics in his letters, but only to discuss news of the family.
I've planned this marriage for 20 years, and now I'm supposed to accept that I've failed?
On the contrary, Your Majesty. We must accept it. The birds have flown.
Leopold strides away irritably. At Buckingham Palace, the Queen walks unaccompanied along a gallery. A door in the corner of the gallery opens and Conroy steps in. Victoria looks down the length of the empty gallery, then turns to face Conroy with a steely look in her eyes. His cold, hard face stares back at her.
Your Majesty.
She turns and leaves the gallery. At a recital, Albert and Victoria catch each other's eye. At the same time, Sir John Conroy strides out of the palace and steps into a waiting carriage. The Duchess of Kent watches forlornly from a window as the carriage, loaded with Conroy's trunk and personal effects, leaves. Victoria, wearing a lilac gown, crosses to her husband, who's standing with Peel and Wellington.
I've been boring Sir Robert and the Duke with my ideas for encouraging the arts.
Does Sir Robert care for such frivolity?
I have many interests, ma'am. And my government would support the Prince's plans wholeheartedly.
Your government? What government is this?
I meant if I should be fortunate enough to form another government, ma'am.
And when he does, there'll be no repeat of the old problem. Some of your ladies have already agreed to resign. And Sir Robert will ask for no more change than that.
The Duchess of Sutherland nods. Victoria smiles coolly.
Thank you, Sir Robert.
Albert nods with satisfaction. In their bedroom...
How dare you speak to me in that way before them? How dare you talk across me as if I were a child?
I did no such thing.
Oh, no? Well, you sorted this. You've sorted that, you and Sir Robert. You and the Duke, and all without reference to me.
Victoria, I thought you'd be pleased.
I will tell you what you thought. You thought that I was a woman to be petted and passed over and ignored.
Would it were so simple, then we might avoid more scandals of your making.
Have you lost your mind?
Do you wonder at it? Less than 3 years on the throne, and you and your precious Melbourne have pushed this monarchy to the brink of an abyss.
I've told you before, and I will tell you again, you are my husband here, and that is all.
And that is quite enough, believe me.
I will not have my role usurped. I wear the crown, and if there are mistakes, they will be my mistakes, and no one else will make them. No one, not even you.
I'm leaving before you excite yourself and harm the child.
You will go when I dismiss you. I am your queen, and I am telling you to stay.
Good night, Victoria.
You may not go. You may not go. I order you to stay here in this room. Albert!
Victoria sweeps out of the palace and down the red carpet towards her waiting carriage drawn by four white horses. The royal guardsmen present arms as she steps into the carriage. Seeing Albert coming down the red carpet, she deliberately averts her eyes.
There is no need for you to accompany me.
I've said I'll come with you, so I will come with you.
The black lacquered royal carriage leaves the precincts of the palace. Victoria sits po-faced next to her husband. He acknowledges the smiling onlookers.
For pity's sake, smile, woman. Anyone would think we had quarrelled.
Don't talk to me.
Albert spots a man with a gun. In the palace, the Duchess gets goose flesh on her arm. With dreamlike slowness, Victoria gasps as she looks at the gunman take aim again. Albert, seeing it too, throws himself in front of Victoria and takes the bullet. A horse rears up. A guardsman draws his sword. Albert sprawls back in the carriage. A passerby disarms the assassin. As he's led away, the man, who's about 20, smirks insolently at Victoria. Inside the palace, footmen scamper ahead of the guardsman, carrying the blood-soaked prince over his shoulder. Victoria, running alongside with other members of the royal household, glances plaintively at her mother as she runs into the bedroom. The Duchess stays rooted to the spot. In a side aisle of Westminster Abbey, Victoria, wearing a hooded black cloak, raises her eyes to the heavens as she prays for Albert, her face full of sorrow and regret. Albert's hand twitches as he lies in bed. His eyes flicker open. Victoria, her eyes red from weeping, is standing in the middle of the bedroom. The royal physician steps away from the bed.
There's nothing more I can do here. The prince needs rest. Your Majesty.
As soon as the doctor has left the room, she rushes to the bed and showers Albert with kisses.
I'm so sorry. I thought I was going to lose you.
I don't think it was a very good shot.
Why did you do it? You're so stupid. Why did you do it?
I had two very good reasons. First, I am replaceable, and you are not.
You are not replaceable to me.
Second, you are the only wife I've got or ever will have. You are my whole existence, and I will love you until my last breath.
They kiss lovingly, and Victoria lays her head on his chest. The picture fades. In daylight, she strolls through the grounds with Melbourne.
We're told the man was mad.
Is that reassuring? Can't decide.
May I be honest, ma'am? Even a politician can be honest sometimes.
She takes his arm.
My guidance has not always been faultless. And I'm sorry for it. But I speak to you now as a true friend.
I know.
The prince is a good man. A better man than any of us knew. I know he does not think as well of me. My vanity is not the issue here. He is able. He is clever. And he is faithful. Let him share your work.
He kisses her hand.
There is one task more your majesty must face. If the prince is to feel truly welcome here.
Ledson leaves the palace. Victoria and Albert watch her departing carriage from an upstairs window.
I needed her so much as a child.
A footman brings some papers into the next door room. Albert, his arm in a sling, looks surprised. Wiping her eyes, Victoria follows him into the day room.
I hope you don't mind I had your desk brought in.
Don't I have a say in this?
No.
Full of smiles, they hug each other, and then Albert draws back the chair behind his desk and sits down on it, facing Victoria in her chair. She kicks her legs happily. The picture fades. Albert gently hands the baby to Victoria.
Good morning.
He kisses the top of Victoria's head and pats her shoulder, then leaves the room, nodding to the Duchess as he passes her. Victoria, cuddling her baby, looks at her mother, and her face softens. The Duchess steps towards her. The picture fades. Victoria and Albert had 9 children. Among their descendants are the royal families of Britain, Spain, Sweden, Norway, Yugoslavia, Russia, Greece, Romania, and Germany. A look back to the morning after their wedding, when Victoria, in her nightdress, her long dark hair loose about her shoulders, sat gazing at her sleeping husband with a loving smile and then snuggled down next to him. Victoria and Albert reigned together for 20 years. In her bedroom, Victoria, dressed in a purple satin gown, straightens Albert's waistcoat, laid out on a settee with his other clothes. Prince Albert died from typhoid at the age of 42. In memory of her husband, Victoria had his clothes laid out every day until her death at the age of 81. Laughing happily, they walk arm in arm towards the Grand Chamber. As they enter, they exchange a quick smile and then adopt an air of regal composure in the presence of their subjects. Victoria wearing a diamond diadem and a blue silk gown, Albert in a black tunic with 2 rows of gold buttons down the front. The picture fades to black. Among their accomplishments, Victoria and Albert championed reforms in education, welfare, and industry. Their unflagging support of the arts and sciences was most famously celebrated in Prince Albert's Great Exhibition of 1851. Victoria remains the longest-serving British sovereign to date. This audio description was read by Lonnie Evans, written by Veronica Hicks for IMS. Young Victoria was directed by Jean-Marc Vallée, written by Julian Fellows. Produced by Graham King, Martin Scorsese. Produced by Tim Headington, Sarah Ferguson.
My love, your love.
Executive producer Colin Vaines. Co-producer Dennis O'Sullivan. Queen Victoria was played by Emily Blunt, Prince Albert, Rupert Friend.
Was found a place I never dreamed I would go.
Lord Melbourne was played by Paul Bettany. The Duchess of Kent, Miranda Richardson. King William by Jim Broadbent.
Safe behind a castle of stone.
King Leopold, Thomas Kretschmann. Sir John Conroy, Mark Strong. Baron von Stockmar, Jasper Christensen. Queen Adelaide, Harriet Walter. Baroness Ledson, Jeanette Hayne. Lord Wellington, Julian Glover. Sir Robert Peel, Michael Maloney. Ernst, Michiel Hussmann. Lady Flora Hastings, Genevieve O'Reilly. The Duchess of Sutherland, Rachel Stirling. Director of Photography, Hagen Bogdansky, BVK. Production designer, Patrice Vermette. Edited by Jill Bilcock, ACE, Matt Garner. Costume designer, Sandy Powell. Casting by Susie Figgis. Co-producer Anita Overland, composer Ilyanesh Kerry, makeup and hair designer Jenny Shearcour, music supervisor Maureen Crow. The rest of the cast, Watson was played by Morven Crissy, Edward Oxford, Joseph Altin, Man on Soapbox, Tom Brooke, Young Victoria, age 11, Michaela Brooks, Young Victoria, age 5, Grace Smith, Lady Portman, Sophie Roberts, The Newsboy, Charlie Clark. Camerera Turner, Robert Cambrinus. Lord Chamberlain, Tom Fisher. Footman, Sean Dingwall. Duchess of Montrose, Alice Glover. Sir James Clark, David Horovitch. Landlady, Jo Hartley. Archbishop of Canterbury, Bernard Lloyd. Earl of Derby, Joni Lynn Perkis. Speaker, Ian Mitchell. Whig member, David Robb. Charles Kemble, Malcolm Sinclair. Marchioness of Hastings, Julia St. John. Dancing Master, Thomas Michael Voss. Lady-in-Waiting, Julie McDonnell. Duke of Sussex, Liam Scott. Opera singers, Mark Beasley, Richard Quinn. Footman, Nick Chopping, Rowley Earlham. Cupid, Kelly Dent. Riding Double Victoria, Kelly Dent. Riding Double Albert, C.C. Smith. Falling Bishop, Mark Henson. Officer of Escort, Dominic Priest. Apprehending Pedestrian, Peter White. Pedestrian, Lenny Woodcock. Stunt Coordinator, Rob Inch. Supervising Art Director, Paul Inglis. Art Directors, Christopher Lowe, Alexandra Walker. Location Managers, Martin Joy, Tom Crook. Assistant Costume Designer, Deborah Scott. Costume Supervisor Yvonne Duckett. Costume Coordinator Caroline Fallon. Original score produced by Steve McLaughlin. Original score performed by the London Metropolitan Orchestra. Orchestra conducted by Andy Brown. Score recorded at Abbey Road Studios. Supervising Music Editor Jay Durr. Featured musicians. Piano Sally Heath. Harp, Gillian Tingley. Counter tenor, William Purfoy. Vocals, Celia Graham, Chad Hobson. Glass harmonica, Alasdair Malloy. Violin, Gabrielle Lester. Cello, Caroline Dale. Drums, Scott Shields. Zadok the Priest, HWV 258. Written by George Friedrich Handel. Performed by the Royal Academy Consort. The Cold Song, written by Henry Purcell. Performed by Billy Purefoy. Only You, love theme from The Young Victoria, performed by Sinead O'Connor, written by Ilan Eshkeri, Scott Shields, Nikki Hassman, and Pam Sheen. Walzer alla Paganini, written by Johann Strauss I. Schwanengesang, Swan Song No. 4, Stuntion Serenade, written by Franz Schubert. Serenade for Strings in E Major, written by Antonin Dvorak. What Power Art Thou, written by Henry Purcell. Thanks to the National Trust, Ham House. Thanks to the National Trust, Austerley Park, London. Copyright GK Films, LLC, all rights reserved. All material is protected by copyright laws of the United States and all countries throughout the world. GK Films LLC is the author of this motion picture for the purposes of copyright and other laws. Any unauthorized exhibition, distribution, or copying of this film or any part thereof, including soundtrack, is an infringement of the relevant copyright and will subject the infringer to severe civil and criminal liabilities.